Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Rochester Regional Health's Sands Constellation Heart Institute, with offices at Rochester General and Unity Hospitals, Brighton, Greece, Dansville, and Geneseo. Caring for hearts in Western New York and the Finger Lakes for more than 15 years. For information, call 585-442-5320.
From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1993 when rapper Tupac Shakur released a song that became a hit called Keep Your Head Up. In the song, he urged women in poverty to stay strong, to stand up for themselves, to demand better of the men around them, particularly the men who become fathers. But later, in a song called Young Black Male, Tupac raps about his sexual conquests of so-called sluts and hoes. There are many other songs that offer similar language, or worse. And that's just one artist. Yesterday on this program, we started to examine the legacy of the group N.W.A., whose story is the subject of the hit movie Straight Outta Compton. Today, we continue that conversation with a focus on misogyny in hip-hop culture. And my guests for the hour, let me welcome them now. Back with us is Natasha Chen Christensen, the Chair of Anthropology, History, Political Science, and Sociology at Monroe Community College. Natasha, nice to see you again.
Nice seeing you again.
William Cleeton Gandino is a college student and a rapper himself. Nice to have you here, Will.
Thank you for having me.
And Marquette Lloyd is here, a Rochester native involved in a number of causes and conversations in our community. And Marquette, nice to see you as well.
What up?
And so here we are. You're getting more comfortable there, Marquette. I like it. It's good to see you. So here we are, doing something that we rarely do on this program, which is continue a conversation from a previous day. But we had lit up the phones, and we barely really kind of scratched the surface on the question of misogyny in hip-hop culture. And I want to start with where we left off, which is a broad question about whether it's a problem at all or if we're over-exaggerating the issue. And we were talking to Greg Brandon, who has been in the hip-hop scene in Rochester for more than 30 years. And he was quick to point out there is misogyny in porn in so many places, and that the emphasis on examining it in hip-hop culture, he was saying, sure, it's there, but it's in a lot of other places as well. And Natasha, we didn't have a whole lot of time to examine that, but I want to start there because you kind of recoiled at that comment from Greg, and maybe Greg will join us as well this hour, but why did you recoil? Why don't we start there?
Because, yes, misogyny is embedded in U.S. culture, and we can see it in all facets, but the question was directly about hip-hop, and I think there is this tendency to try to exonerate hip-hop from its misogyny by saying, well, it's cultural, we're not the only ones. You know, there's all sorts of excuses that are made. I don't think that simply because it is embedded in the rest of culture that any part of culture should be exonerated from the accusations or being held accountable.
So is it a problem in hip-hop culture?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So some would say it's just part of it. It's part of the language. It's part of life of the culture. And that, you know, it's easy for us standing on the outside to condemn it if they don't understand it. Is there a way to understand it?
I had given you the sociological understanding yesterday where I said that because minority men have been kind of held back from claiming masculinity in the way that it's been socially constructed in the United States through economic gain, through financial success, that there's this tendency to maintain power in ways that are feasible in everyday life. And part of that is kind of, I wouldn't say picking on, but kind of claiming power through those who are even more oppressed than you. Right, so that translates to women, to the LGBT community, to all sorts of facets. And you can say, well, okay, there's a reason, right? Is it an excuse? I don't necessarily think so.
Marquette, is that sad to you? If you agree with what Natasha is saying, is it sad to you that the analysis is these are people, you know, young men growing up, there's this paradigm that they're supposed to be, you know, economically successful. If they're not, they're stuck in poverty. They're looking for ways to sort of, you know, express some kind of masculinity. And one of the ways it comes out is misogyny. First of all, do you agree with that from what you've seen in your own life?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I wouldn't say it happens to everyone, but, you know, I'm not going to pick and choose. I do see it.
And how do you feel about that, you know, seeing that sort of embedded in the places where you grew up? Again, not everybody, But how do you feel about that?
Well, personally, I've gone a different direction than, you know, everyone else or people who feel that way. And to the people who feel that way, I do kind of, you know, feel sorry for them that they haven't found their way in life to understand the world around them and prosper in it. But at the same time, you know, I don't really have a solution for them.
Does it hold people back? Are you worried that it holds people back from, you know, finding success? And again, I think Natasha makes a good point. Well, we don't want to so narrowly define success as to only getting a high-paying job, et cetera. But I'm talking about maybe moving out of poverty, a stable life, maybe stable employment, et cetera. Can it hold people back?
Well, yeah, hanging on to old ideas will hold someone back. Not letting go and joining in the modern era and the modern understanding of how things work socially will hold anyone back. And I definitely see it as holding people back.
Now, Will, when you are thinking about your own work, your own music, putting together rap, is there a concern that if you don't sort of fall into that sort of expectation of those themes, that your rap will be viewed as somewhat less or lacking?
Not for me. When I make my own lyrics, when I write my own songs, I try to take it from my heart, right? And I'm very much inspired by hip-hop from a different era than our current era. And even though hip-hop from the 90s and 80s had problems, compared to today, you know, it was beautiful. Because hip-hop today is so much controlled by large record companies and so much, you know, lost from the actual voice that hip-hop originally was. So when hip-hop was what my lyrics are, what I write, would not be looked at as less than because it's coming from my heart, right? And that was the original intent of hip-hop. You know, the original intent was to give a voice to people. And, you know, originally people would rap, and, you know, nothing was ever recorded. It was at block parties, you know. And the voice was just to, you know, let out some things that were inside of people. And then it started to be recorded, and immediately it kind of took a swing towards, you know, a record company saw, you know, Rapper's Delight as a money-making opportunity. And that has since been kind of the hip-hop anthem, you know, the original hip-hop record. And since then, you know, even with Def Jam Records, when they kind of didn't want LL Cool J to be a part of the Stop the Violence KRS-One song because that wasn't their, you know, record company agenda. So it's been there forever, but compared to now, like, rappers that speak from the heart don't, like, it's like underground rap. They're not on the radio. They're not what you hear in at the club or with your buddies.
But isn't that important? It seems like what you're saying, and don't let me misinterpret you, Will, mm-hmm. but it seems like what you're saying is you are composing rap from your heart.
Right.
And it's not based on misogyny or this paradigm of women must be described in certain terms to exert male dominance. That's not for you.
Right.
And there are certain people on the scene who feel the same way, but are they breaking through financially? Is it hard to be successful?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to be successful when you do that because you're not, like if you join a record company, it's very difficult for you to do what you want to do. And, you know, many rappers that are successful that aren't, you know, didn't join a major record company will tell you that. But there's so few of them that have made, you know, a scratch just to actually, you know, they're not rich like Lil Wayne. They're not rich like the rappers you see on TV. But, you know, they've done it enough to make it so they can be their daytime job, right? They've succeeded that much. But there's not the same success in it. So you could understand. I was at a KRS-One lecture one time, and he talked about, like, are you going to, you know, you have an, like, if you're hungry, right? And you have this option. Are you going to feed your family and say what they want you to say? Or are you going to starve and say what you want to say? And that was his analogy. And he didn't really disrespect rappers that have sold out, so to speak. He was kind of like, I understand that, but, you know, I'd rather starve.
I understand the point. So let's listen to a clip from the song that I referenced right off the top of the hour. This is Tupac Shakur, Keep Your Head Up. And when you talk about what could have been an anthem to women in poverty with all of, you know, sort of the right messages, listen to this minute-long clip and tell me that this isn't the kind of thing that would be great to hear more of. Let's listen. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe. And if you can't learn to love, you should leave. Cause sister, you don't need. And I ain't trying to gash up, I just roll them how I see.
You know what makes me unhappy? That when brothers make babies and leave a young mother to be a patch. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, ladies, but keep your head up.
This studio is really enjoying that. Right?
I got a trio here of Will, Evan, and
I remember
Tupac.
That song. That's from my childhood. And, you know, again, my scene wasn't the scene of women growing up in poverty growing up. But I knew the song and I loved the song. And I still today, I think, boy, that sound, that's Natasha, what am I missing? That's a great message,
no,
isn't it?
It's a great message. And it's interesting
sold.
That he addressed so many feminist issues in that one song.
I know.
Right?
But he also turns around and then has got music that there are certain lyrics I can't even read on the air from him. And how do we right. how do we square that in hip hop culture? How is it that, because what Will's saying is, you know, it's hard to break through if your message is what we just heard, you know, without, devoid of some of what we would call misogynistic language, etc. You know, could Tupac's record have come out and done as well as it did with songs like that up and down the album without some of the rougher language? Will, what do you think? Would that record have sold without some of the, unfortunately, counterbalancing misogynistic stuff?
I think Tupac is not a great example for hip-hop as a whole, because Tupac, you know, he was straight up. He said when he wasn't, you know, all the different dynamics of Tupac. So he's got a lot of anger. He was one of the angriest rappers that I've ever heard. And, so I think when I listen to Tupac and I hear the rest of that album came out in 93, a second album, which went platinum, which wasn't that great for him compared to the albums that came after that. So even with him, that was of his earlier stuff before he went to Death Row Records,
yep.
which was, you know, a lot more of the let's try to make money off of this rather than let's be from the soul. So that whole album, to me, it's got what Papa's song about not having a father, his father that left him.
Yep.
And it's got a lot of rage in it. It has a song with Ice-T and Ice Cube on that album, too. So, it's got a lot to it. But I think it's very relevant to have everything that he had. Because, you know, he wasn't misogynist like N.W.A. was in that same way. Being that, you know, he made a song about his mom. He made a song about, you know, keep your head up. He had a lot going on and he talked about it. He was raised by a Black Panther, right? So I don't think you can really look at Tupac and be like, all right, is this, you know, artist in hip hop, do the rules apply to him the same way as they apply to everyone?
You're saying he's more of an outlier?
I disagree that he's an outlier.
Okay.
I feel like he just put more of his emotions into his music and not so much of the streets all the time. He put street stuff, he put his emotions as well. He told you stories about his life.
But the street stuff was his emotions.
Well, you can't, you know, that's all part of him. But I'm
right.
just saying, like, I meant more of his sensitive emotions, like opening up about
right.
himself and his ideals about women and how he felt about his mother and how he felt dejected by his father, you know.
Which is why you can't compare him to the rest of hip hop.
Well, he's not the only one who went that route.
He's the first one to, though.
A lot of rappers sing about their moms.
Since Tupac.
Yeah, but there's still those odes to their moms interspersed with all of the other stuff.
Even right? Biggie, he was a serious misogynist, and he talked about his mom a lot.
But no one had to keep your head up.
What?
No.
Biggie didn't have to keep your head up?
Yeah, well, like that
sort of a
that
feminist
song specifically.
Anthem.
Biggie could never make anything feminist if you ever listened to his music.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I'm just saying, even he, you know, showed his sensitive side in those moments. Even when he talked about his kids, too, like, you know. In one of his intros to his song, he's talking about how he's doing what he's doing to feed his daughter.
Right.
All right. So there's two competing themes that we're talking about here as we continue the conversation about misogyny and hip hop culture, and I think the film Straight Outta Compton peeled back a little bit of the question that frankly, Greg Brandon, who called the program yesterday, a longtime DJ in the local hip-hop scene, he was saying, you know, what's the role of the Jerry Hellers, played by Paul Giamatti in the movie, the white executives who often own these labels, and not always now, of course, we've seen a lot of change there, but what was the role in developing some of these themes for profit versus is it really from the heart? And does it sell? And is it part of just, is it embedded in the culture that you can't take away from it? And Natasha, let's go around the table. How do you start to square that? Because Greg was saying, doesn't Jerry Heller have a role in this? Don't some of the white executives have a role in this?
And they definitely do have a role in it. If you kind of look at all the media conglomerates, there is someone who is choosing to play these songs on the radio, to have them show on the VMAs, you know, on the awards shows, etc. But like I said, I think it's much more of a complex issue than just saying, well, it comes straight from the artists or it comes straight from the producers, or it comes straight from the executives. It's something that needs to be kind of examined in totality rather than piece by piece.
Okay. Will, what do you think?
I would agree with that. I think that, I don't know, it's a difficult, I think that there are pieces from both sides. But I think that what the record companies do is they don't help the issue. Like, I think they push more for, you know, something that's violent, something that's, you know, not like violent and like the express your like violence towards women, like that type of, you know, internal, like just the way the lyrics are said, right? Which NWA kind of had. I don't know if they would have, I can say about NWA though, because they very well may have done the same thing, whether they had Jerry Heller or not, in their lyrics. But I think overall in hip-hop, it's pushed more in that direction because of a record company.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, maybe NWA would have been the same group, no matter what, who decided to champion them. But they might not have... There's, for every NWA, there's, what, 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 groups that don't make it, right? Mm-hmm. Or don't make it in the same way, don't make it on the scene, don't get funded to produce a record. And so someone is choosing someone with perceived talent, and then saying, all right, fine, these themes, ideas, they go forward. Marquette, what do you think?
I agree with that. The record companies more than likely pick what sells. They're not going to, you know, pick a flop album. And if they do, you know, the artist probably gets downplayed in the company or even kicked off the label often. But I don't feel like rap, like hip-hop has to be misogynistic to sell records. There's other ways. There's other artists who've made it other ways, you know, like Queen Latifah, UNITY, freaking Macklemore, you know, he doesn't use any misogyny in his music. I'm not saying that everyone likes Macklemore, but he has some popularity because, you know, I know his name and people know his name. But as far as the record companies guiding music, I don't want to just condemn the record companies and say it's all them, because these guys are artists and they have artistic integrity, you'd like to think. So they wouldn't just let the record company, you know, package their music in a way that they didn't present it to sell it.
It can be tough, though. I mean, I've known a lot of people in the music industry. It is hard to get a record deal. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to aspiring artists who've been told, it's pretty good, but we're going to need a hit. We're going to need, you know, what your material is pretty good. We don't have a hit. Write me a hit. Let's get a hit. And that's defined in different ways in different genres of music. So I don't know. I've never talked to a rap executive. I've never talked to someone who used to work for Death Row Records. I've never talked to somebody in the hip-hop scene.
Well, if there's a rapper who had a bad experience, he often puts it in his music. Like, Jadakiss had a bad experience with his, you know, producers and people who signed him, and he talked about it a lot in his music. He let everyone know, I know exactly what happened based on his music. He told everyone, Puffy did him dirty.
Okay.
Well, he called Puffy out.
Oh, yeah.
All I want to know is, you know, what is important to me is not, because like, you got Def Jam, you got, like, Interscope. These record companies are owned by parent companies. Mm-hmm. So whose interests are really, you know, involved? And the parent companies are owned by a very, very, very wealthy white man. So who writes the checks to, like, your Puffy, to, like, your Jay-Z? You know what I'm talking about?
But is he like the evil Illuminati guy sitting at the top of the pyramid trickling down orders?
I'm saying is that it goes deeper.
Put more misogyny in that or it doesn't sell.
It goes deeper than just your P. Diddy. Do you know what I'm saying?
But that's when you start to get in conspiracy theories.
No, it's not, dude, because this company owns Interscope. This company owns Def Jam Records.
Okay.
So they get to tell them what to do. They bought them.
I understand.
It's not like, all right, like we're going to pretend like we're not affiliated with you and then influence your music. They're directly affiliated with them.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is it may not be a case of them saying, now write something misogynistic. They may be saying, I've got a choice of 100 groups that could break through. I'm going to choose this one because their material is more likely to sell.
Right.
But Marquette, are you saying that there needs to be sort of integrity and accountability on the artist's part to say it's our music?
Well, they're presenting it to us as their art, you know, as from them. So if they're letting the companies tear it apart and make it into something that it's not and then letting it be released and taking the money for it, I mean, they're accountable for it, whether it was their work or not.
Natasha?
I just wanted to go back to the movie because that's how we started this conversation yesterday. If you watch the movie, it really is just Ice Cube in his notebook, right? Like all the lyrics came out of Ice carrying around this little notebook the entire movie, mm-hmm. scribbling things down. It was presented as this was his material,
yep.
right? And Marquette, like right before we ended yesterday, was talking about a specific song with Ice Cube. Yep. And the lyrics to that are incendiary, right? He came out with this upstanding ladies, I'm not talking about, quote, bitches, and hoes, like I'm not talking about upstanding ladies when I talk about bitches. But then he has the lyric of I spell girl with a B, right? So it kind of begs the question, are you talking about all women or are you just talking about
specific women? And it
certainly implies
he is. And right. you said you take it as him applying that to all women.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no other way to understand that lyric.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a second, we're going to talk about, again, kind of delve a little further. What is the impact on what would happen if the hip-hop community, we're not asking for wholesale changes, but what if more of the music was a little more like Will's or a little bit more of like what we just heard? You know, what would happen to the industry and what would happen to people who are growing up listening to it? We're going to talk about that in a second, but let's get your first phone call. And this is John in Brighton. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Thank you. It seems like everyone on the panel agrees that there's a misogynistic component to hip-hop. I'm reminded of the conversation you had, I think it was last week, about picking any art at the carousel,
yep.
which was also an objectionable form of artistic expression, albeit 100 years old. Are there similar principles to be applied here? I mean, should they both be taken down or both be tolerated as how do you square those two?
It's an interesting question. I don't know how familiar our panel is with the carousel. Our panel is with the panel, and it's the carousel panel up at Ontario Beach Park that John is referring to, that has art from over 100 years ago that, you know, used to be categorized as the so-called pickaninny art. You know, sort of really race-based caricatures meant to belittle or dehumanize, especially young black children, and so. It's an interesting question, but I don't necessarily see a parallel in that. I don't think you can say pull all the music that you think is misogynistic. The art at the Ontario Beach Carousel had a clear purpose and came from a clear era, and the intention is not really debatable, whereas I think it's much more subjective on what qualifies as misogynistic and how do you draw the line. I think it has to be more of a community decision. We're not going to play this, or a record label, we're not going to promote this. What do you think, John?
I don't know. It just seems that we've had a lot of discussion on the excuses for the misogyny, but I mean, there's no doubt it's misogynist and hurtful, just like in, I mean, not just like, but in very similar ways to racial caricatures, etc. It seems like we got to be careful in both cases, really, about limiting the the art, the expression, and I find it hard to distinguish the two, really.
So how much racist art should we have, and how much, if we're going to limit it, how much do you think is appropriate?
I don't think we should at all, really.
Oh, okay. So then we shouldn't limit it. We should probably end it.
Well, I'm just saying I don't think the government should limit it. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. John, thanks for the call. Marquette, are you kind of hung up on his point about, are you not seeing what he views as the carousel?
Yeah, I
as the same?
No, I don't see it as the same. It's not the same situation at all.
Yeah, because to some of the points that our listeners have made about this, that is a carousel that county government is essentially operating. Mm-hmm. So
it's public.
It is public, and so in some regard, you can easily, you know, just characterize it as your tax dollars are supporting that. That's different than a case of government supporting certain rap labels or whatever. So. John, I appreciate the question on that. I don't think that you can pull misogynistic music off the air. Natasha, no?
No, because with the carousel, you actually have something to pinpoint. There's something tangible there, right? You can make a very cohesive argument based on the one piece of art. You're looking at misogyny being insidious. There's no way to really pinpoint it to one artist, one song, one genre, etc. And I don't think we are excusing, I don't think anyone here has excused misogyny. What we're saying is that, you know, from Greg's comment yesterday, that at the same time that we acknowledge that it is embedded in our culture, there's no reason to not call it out, to not say something about it, to not want it, you know, we have to strive for change.
It sounds like the panel thinks it doesn't have to be embedded, that hip-hop can survive without it.
Absolutely.
You know, and but if that happens, it's not going to be because somebody orders music off the air.
Oh, no.
Like that's a different kind of change process. In fact, the moment you order that off the air, probably the stronger that music gets. It's like the police who showed up at NWA show and said, you can't play the song F the Police. Was there any doubt they were going to play it? And regardless of the consequences? So... But, John, I appreciate the phone call. Let's turn to Rick in Rochester. You're next, Rick. Go ahead.
Yeah. I hear somebody on the panel. He was saying he doesn't believe in a conspiracy theory of these big record labels pushing our stuff. And that, to me, they do. They do push it. That's all you hear. And to me, I just feel like they think that's all African-American young kids want to hear. Like Common Sense, he's a good rapper. He's never on the radio. I feel like these guys are the big Ivy Tower pushing that stuff because that's what they think that young minority kids want to hear. And just to hear the guy in your panel saying that you don't make it light of it, like, so you think it's a conspiracy? Yeah, it is. I think they push it, and that's what they think we want to hear.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off. I was more referring to, like, we don't have, like, direct information. Like, we don't have any, like, documents saying that these guys are doing this. They're not admitting it. I mean, we can all see it happening and stuff. But as far as proof, like, hardcore evidence, someone bringing them to charges for this, it hasn't happened. You know, no one's stacked.
What do you mean, charges? It's not illegal.
Well, I think
we're... I didn't mean to say it was illegal. Like, I mean, BET, no one's like...
You watch it. I stopped watching BET because every time I turned on BET...
I did too, man. I stopped. It's like they were just trying to erode our culture and degrade it or something. Like, we were only capable of this. Right. I agree with you. And I'm not saying that this isn't happening. I'm just saying it's not... To me, I haven't seen the proof or the evidence. I'm a proof guy. I want proof. I agree that it looks like it's happening, but I'm...
Look, on WDKX, you'll see proof all day.
I don't listen to DKX. I don't listen to the radio anymore.
I grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. We listened to Nas and rappers that said something. Now, it seemed like as soon as the economy crapped the bed, all of a sudden it was, let's pop Molly, let's party.
Right, right. And I still got CDs in my car, man. I still got Nas. And, you know, man, I feel you, man. Yeah. I'm just saying that I wanted... If we're going to start talking about people doing something sinister, I want evidence before I agree to that.
But can I jump in and say, I also think, and Rick, please stay there, I also hear from Marquette, he's not saying white executives are not promoting this. I think what he's saying is they probably are, but let's focus more on the accountability of the artists. You know, just they don't have to do it, and we don't have to exist as a way that says they must do it. Well,
but if you make a demand for it, and then, you know what I mean? Like, they're saying that's what they want. If they turn around tomorrow and say, we don't want this, we don't want the misogyny, we don't want killing in the music and all that crap, and then it wouldn't be a demand for it. You understand what I'm saying? If they play it, they're telling everybody else, they're giving the green light to talk about it. If they won't play it, or they back away from that, then you won't get it.
You're right. They will go where the money is. They will go where the sales are. They will go where the demand is. And this is a complex question because we know that demand is created in a number of different ways, some of which is just repetitious airplay, some of which comes from the people growing up in certain places asking for it. What do you think, Will?
I want to say that the reason that the record companies are accountable is because they choose who to sign to their record company. So they know what they're getting when they sign that person to their record company.
But Rick's also saying if people aren't going to buy their stuff, they won't sign them. And that's true.
Exactly. That's what I mean. They're going to sign people that are going to say what they expect them to say, which will make them money, the record company money. So they're going to sign the misogynists and the lots of violence and the
But if they
the
don't
songs.
Sign those people, if they don't create, I feel like they create a demand for it. Because that's why you hear on the radio. You don't hear anything else but money, drugs, and killing. That's it. If
I
you
agree.
Learn something
I
different,
agree with you. I think they shouldn't sign these people.
And then we may go in a different direction. But I feel like, I'm just telling you, man, like these kids, they're influenced by this music. I come from the city. I see it when kids, they really think that what these rappers are saying about Jay-Z, I sold plenty of drugs and did this. I killed people. They really think that's true, and they go out and try to mimic that. That's why we have shootings the way we do, because I'm telling you, it's the music.
They try to live that
culture,
that falsetto street life that the music presents.
Down the street and just they mimic that, and they want to make that the reality. But these rappers, they don't live that life. They don't struggle. They don't go out and rob people and kill. Some may have before they started, but it's Jay-Z's 40 years old, and he's still talking about. It's ridiculous. If somebody need to hold them accountable for that, like stop talking about selling drugs when you're worth $300 million and you're married to Beyonce. Mm-hmm. You don't sell keys anymore. You probably never did.
Okay. So Rick, you think this kind of music, misogyny in music, or some of the, you know, the promotion of violence in music, you think it's hurting kids in places like Rochester?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, man, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, I grew up in the city. I've seen it. I'm telling you, these kids can't read a book, but they can verse word for word. Probably sing 20 songs to you about killing, shooting, drugs, and all that.
Yeah,
and so people know how to make people know people like coca or whip it. Like it's telling people how to make drugs, and then kids they hear that they. They see that it's glorified. Oh, that's what I want to do when I get older. I want to sell keys like Jay-Z. And they glorify it. It's ridiculous to the point. It's just ridiculous. It's sad, man. It's sad. Because no other culture does it. Caucasians, they don't do that. Like, go back to their music. They don't. You know what I mean? They don't do that. But we do it. And then these kids mimic it.
Rock and roll music,
like,
metal music is full of that
rappers
stuff.
Okay.
They don't.
All right. So hold on. Let's keep the focus here, Rick. And I want to ask you one question before I let you go. And we're going to get to some other callers. I think this is an important moment in this conversation, which is that if there's agreement that those kind of messages can have a real impact on kids growing up in poverty and impact their actions, how do we start to change it? Clearly, you're frustrated with the companies that are staffed by these executives who are choosing this kind of music to promote. But we are not going to be able to go tell the Jerry Hellers of the world, don't promote this, because they know there's money in it. So what's the first step to changing it? What do you think, Rick?
It's parents and you tell them this stuff is not real. Research people. It's parents at the end of the day, but also company, you know what I mean? Like, if you sell cigarettes, you know they kill people. You know what I mean? It's like you. I appreciate that question. I'm not gonna let my son. I have a 5-year-old son. He's not gonna be singing those verses. He's not. You know what I mean? So definitely parents, but we definitely gotta hold these companies accountable, saying that you're spewing poison, and it needs to stop. It just needs to stop. As a culture, as African Americans, we need to tell our kids that's not the way to go. I don't even want that stuff played in my house. I'm 35 years old. I grew up in the streets because it's lies. But so go back to your question. Parents need to start, but then us as a community, we shouldn't promote that stuff. We shouldn't promote the shows that come here. We should let the record sales or the concert attendance decline for the higher ups to say, okay, we're not making money, so we should move on to something else. So I don't know if that answered the question, But it's a couple of problems. I don't know, man. But I'm not going to let my son do it, so I'm starting with me. I can't tell other people what to do, but I'm telling you. And he can tell you if he's African-American and he's sitting on that panel. He can tell you. Kids really do. That affects their brains. Man. They listen to it and they want to mimic it.
Rick,
It's just, I'm sorry. It's just, it's sickening. It needs to stop.
Thank you for the phone call, Rick. Thanks for helping this program, you know, sort of focus on this issue. And you can call back any program. We love having this kind of interaction. Let's before I get to more phone calls, let me just let the panel react briefly. I'm way late for a break, but go ahead, Natasha.
No, I completely agree with you, Rick. I think media literacy is going to be the key. You mentioned how it affects boys. It affects females and women, too. I mean, if you did watch the movie, the women in there were presented as sexual objects, that was something that you have to achieve, that you want to look a certain way, that it's a good thing to be a groupie. And I don't think that's a particularly useful message for girls, women, et cetera, to be absorbing through pop culture.
Okay. Will Marquette, any follow-up with some of Rick's points there?
I just wanted to comment. When I was in the movie and the real misogynist stuff, like the Bi Felicia joke, stuff like that, all the women around me.
He's talking
about
Straight Outta Compton, which is in theaters now. Go ahead, Will.
All the women around me were laughing and like enjoying it, and that was disturbing to me.
I think that's a very important point. Marquette?
I wanted to touch on the point you made about it's not in the Caucasian music. Well, you know, if you ever listen to metal or rock and roll or anything of the sort, you hear stuff about sex, drugs, and even murder, worshiping demons, all different types of crazy stuff. So I don't think any music genre is completely exempt.
Let's get a short break in here, and we're going to come back with more of your questions, comments, phone calls at Evan Dawson on Twitter, where the conversation is going in a lot of different directions this hour as we talk about misogyny and hip-hop culture with Natasha Chen Christensen, the chair of anthropology, history, political science, and sociology at MCC, William Cleeton Gandino, a college student and a rapper himself, and Marquette Lloyd, a Rochester native, who is a... You know, I don't know if he's going to say he's a social activist, but a lot of people think he's doing a lot of important things in our community. Short break and more of your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Labor Day is coming, and this time of year we like to sit down with leaders in the local labor movement to talk about issues that impact unions in Rochester and the Finger Lakes region. We'll talk about what they're concerned about, particularly as we head toward the election seasons, and get your phone calls and comments as well. Talking Labor, Wednesday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Shepherd Ford, serving the greater Rochester region since 1948, offering new and pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs, including hybrids. Located on Routes 5 and 20 in Canandaigua and online at shepherdford.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I want to read a comment just because we've been talking about a term, misogyny. One of our listeners says, I've known many men who think and speak poorly of women, but I've never met an actual misogynist because the term misogyny means to literally hate women, and it's too freely applied to male chauvinists who treat women poorly but don't hate them. There's a problem regarding male dominance historically in business, politics, and sports. Note the lateness of women getting the right to vote in Title IX in collegiate sports, but no evidence of misogyny being the cause. So I think this is just sort of an important moment to kind of just talk about this term real briefly. Misogyny does literally mean, I mean, that's the actual definition, right, Natasha, to hate women?
And part of it is this mentality that women are inferior, that biologically, that somehow they're less than, right? And so in that case, you do have a lot of men, you have a lot of the culture thinking a woman is less capable, a woman is less able. If you kind of look at politics, if you look at our leaders, you are going to see this recurring theme of, if women are leaders, they're challenged constantly.
So I think misogyny to me is a term that has come to mean, you know, regardless of what the actual technical definition is, a view of women as not worthy of equal respect, being treated equally,
right,
being objectified, you know, tolerating women being treated poorly, sometimes even violently.
Right. And in the case of hip-hop, I think in a lot of society, a lot of men are able to kind of divorce their own moms, right, their own wives from their misogyny, yet all the other women in the entire world kind of fall under this category of not quite as able, not quite as worthy as males.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones now. And this is Justin. You're next up. Go ahead, Justin. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Riddy. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Riddy.
Hi.
There you are. Go ahead.
Hi, Riddy.
So Marquette brought this up earlier, and I'm really fascinated with this. Why do you think that, like, when we're talking about misogyny in music or in culture, there's such a hyper-focus on misogyny in, like, hip-hop, when, like, the same people who are criticizing, you know, hip-hop for misogyny are people who are listening to, like, rockers of the 60s and 70s who perpetrated, like, really intense and really disgusting rape culture within, like, their, you know, within their tours and within their spaces. Like, very recently we had the news came out about one of the members of the Runaways experiencing rape, and just like the numerous statutory rape and just straightforward rape that accompanied tours back then. So why do you think there's just a huge focus on hip-hop when sexism in music has existed in lots of genres very prominently for some time?
Well, in this particular conversation, we were focused on the movie Straight Outta Compton, which referred to hip-hop, but, you know, I guess the misogyny and whatnot in other areas of music would be a different topic.
Natasha, what do you...
I guess what
you agree? Oh, go ahead, Riddy.
I'm sorry. I guess what I'm saying is in our broader cultural conversations, there's a huge focus on misogyny and hip-hop, and but that doesn't really seem to extend to other musical genres.
I feel like rock and roll got a fair amount of attention in the 90s for some of the stuff they do. Maybe not currently. I'm not really sure.
I think it's a fair question on whether other genres get more of a pass or if we pretend that the only misogyny out there exists in hip-hop. I'm trying not to frame the discussion that way, but Natasha?
I think one of the things that's going on right now is that if you listen to the radios, if you look at the airplay, if you look at what's selling, I mean, it's primarily hip-hop at this point. I think during the 80s when the hair bands were out there, Motley Crue, they had the exact same messages and they were being criticized.
Girls,
yep. Right? They were a commodity. They were using women as commodities also. I think right now the focus is on hip-hop because of where our culture has gone in terms of the popularity, in terms of what people listen to. And also you're looking at more explicitness, I think, that lately I've been hearing songs like Trap Queen, Side Piece. It's easy to locate that within hip-hop. It's not insinuated. It is not, you know, something very hidden. It's out there.
Yeah, I last night looked up some of the more misogynistic lines in hip hop. I can't even read them. I can't even read them sort of redacted. But Will, you want to weigh in on what she's saying here?
I think that hip hop, it was especially in the 90s, it was used as something to point the finger at, right? Like whenever anything, you know, when there was a guy who shot a cop, and he had a Tupac tape in his car. And he was like, you know, I shot this cop because Tupac said so. And he was a white kid, right? And then they brought up a huge lawsuit on Tupac. So, like, it's especially in the 90s, I don't really know about hip-hop now. I don't listen to hip-hop now. But it was used, you know, we could point the finger. That's the problem. Like, you can take everything out, right? And to me, this is really important. When you point the finger and say that's the problem, you say that everything else isn't the problem. Like, by saying hip-hop's the problem, you're not looking at the rest of American culture, which there's plenty of misogyny in white suburban culture.
Yes, and I agree on that, and that's why I appreciate Riddy's point. You want to follow up, Riddy?
Oh, no, that's
I think it's well said. I'm sorry, and I think it's well taken, but, you know, let me also say that having a conversation yesterday with our second-hour guest, who's a professor of women's studies at Brockport, you know, the way she described it as particularly troubling in hip-hop culture is this. She said, think about the challenge that being a woman and being black has to begin with. Mm-hmm. Think about the societal disadvantages you have. Then think about within your own culture being marginalized as lesser or an object or, you know, being there for sexual gratification of men. And that makes it even more difficult within that culture. Natasha, what do you think?
I agree with Barb. You're looking at Zora Neale Hurston saying the black woman is the mule of the world, right? So as a black woman, you are facing sexism from your own community, and you are facing racism from white feminists who are trying to help a cause. And so you are looking at this case where there are not that many options for black women also. I don't think that the music actually helps in that case.
Okay, back to the phones. This is Barb on one. Go ahead, Barb.
Hi, couple things. I was listening to the radio a few days ago, not the station, Brother Wee's talking with a gay DJ and being very open-minded about this DJ, but yet still referring to women as chicks and broads. So just, you know, how misogyny is out there in the larger culture. But also, what, specifically, a few minutes ago, the discussion was revolved around an early an artist who has said that not all women are to be described negatively as he described them, but then he spelled girls with a P and that. And what concerns me is the discussion from that point, just, and I'm not to pick on anybody, but just to, you know, think about the way we talk, is that it seemed to revolve around the question of this, or proceed without question of this artist's right to judge women as such. And it sounds, two more sentences here, it sounds like times that I've heard white people defend their use of the word, forgive me, nigger, by saying or implying that it applies only to X type of people, low class or what have you. So my question, you know, is, you know, my thought is this, you know, by whose view is this person viewing women? I mean, we're looking at a culture where, you know, a powerful woman is defined as a bitch, and a woman who owns her sexuality is defined as a whore or a hoe. Mm. So I wanted to pass that on.
Thank you, Barb. Any thoughts from the panel there?
I don't think it's okay for Ice Cube. Maybe I misinterpreted what you said, but I think you said, like,
I don't think any of us think it's okay for Ice Cube.
Right.
Like, we were pointing it out, and maybe we kind of got distracted from the point. But we were saying he defended himself, saying that he selectively decides which women are bitches and hoes. But then in a song, he basically just outlined how he feels about all women, and he didn't distinguish any woman from, you know, how he felt.
Well, Natasha, what's the line again? He said, I spell girl starting with a B.
I spell girl with a B. Right? So if that's not calling all women bitches, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
And the background voices in the song are women asking, you know, asking him for things like, can I get my hair done? Can I get my nails done? And he's just, what you need that for? Just the whole tone of the song is like he doesn't respect women. It's saying he
doesn't
respect women.
And he's in control. He'll decide what they're allowed to do. Right. They have to get permission from the male.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Listen to the song.
Yeah. A couple more comments here before we hit the end of the hour. Sarah writes in and says, to the point of surrounding women laughing in a movie over the misogynistic jokes, it's more indicative of our society's perspective as a whole rather than those particular women's perspectives. As a visual artist, I see this all the time when women choose to paint objectified women. They are subscribing to society's idea of beauty, which is inherently a male perspective. As much as this issue does include accountability for the artist, it's a systemic problem that needs to be addressed on a higher level. That's from Sarah. Seeing some nods around the table. Thumbs up. Yeah, a lot of agreement there. Tim writes in, record companies are in the business to make money. That is what the business is there for. They are not there to be the nice guy. I think it's just sort of endorsing the view that we're not going to change it by hoping that the record companies have an altruistic view of what to do about this.
Well, then perhaps the artist should maintain their integrity and not sign
with these
companies.
But they control the artist, dude. But the artists that maintain their integrity aren't offered a deal.
They don't have to sign with them is what I'm saying. They don't have to take their money.
You're telling me that every person in this world has to have integrity because they don't even need an artist. They just need someone who's going to rap in a microphone for them.
If the artists don't want their music
they're
to
not
be used
half
that
of them
way.
Aren't artists, all right? The artists that don't want their music to be used that way, don't sign with them. That's how it is already right now.
All right, that's fine. I'll concede.
Last comment here comes from Jake, and he says, are there any cleaner, wholesome hip-hop artists at all? Of course there are. The question is, you know, how come he's not seeing him on the scene? But can we point to any? right now come to mind?
A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of, I would have loved to see a biography of A Tribe Called Quest over NWA. I would say, you know, we were talking yesterday about how some groups were more political and they just did not gain as much traction. Public Enemy. And that's what I was saying, is that Fight the Power was actually a call to arms. It was a call to action. Fight the powers that be. It did not have the same anger or controversy as F the Police, so I don't think it got quite as much airplay. And it's actually, I guess, more scary to the powers that be to have music like that playing than F the Police.
Fight the Power was still very popular, though.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
But, I mean, to me, what I see the difference between NWA and Public Enemy is that members of NWA went on to have careers outside of music, or like Ice Cube, who's been in plenty of movies where he plays a cop, and Dr. Dre, who's been a producer and signed, you know, like Eminem, made billions of dollars, right? And Public Enemy has just continued to do what they've always done, which is politically active music. And that doesn't put you in the spotlight. And they still make music today, and they still do what they did back then. But like compared to NWA, NWA didn't do that even then, and they definitely didn't continue to do that.
Okay, and we got 30 seconds here. Who else, Marquette, who's out there that's worth listening to that isn't gonna, you know, use that kind of, those kind of themes, misogynistic, et cetera?
Oh, I can't lie. At the time when I was selecting music, I was probably pretty misogynistic myself, so I don't really have any good artists that are free of misogyny. Some artists just have good points. I take the good points and I run with those.
Take the good points.
Common. It was mentioned earlier. He's pretty good.
Common. Really, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I want to thank the panel for continuing the discussion that started yesterday. And for the second straight day, you know, we had trouble just getting to all the different comments online, on Twitter, email. So thank you very much. Natasha Chen Christensen from MCC, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And William Clayton Gandino, I hope to hear your music someday, Will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Marquette Lloyd, I'm sure we'll talk about other things as well soon in the future. Nice to see you. Thank you.
I was very glad to be here.
All right. Thanks for all the phone calls and whatnot. We'll close with a little more Tupac here. Again, this is the kind of theme that maybe we'll see a little bit more of this in the future. This is Keep Your Head Up. To tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, ladies, but keep your head up. Keep your head up, ooh, child.